Hey, welcome to In Her Lens, a podcast dedicated to underrepresented voices in film and television. This season, I'm focusing on filmmaking in the fight against climate change. My name is Nadine, and I am your host. I sat down and I researched and I asked myself some questions. Who is working at this intersection? What are they working on? What are the realities as related to climate, to waste, and to energy when films and series are produced? What is really happening on the ground? I'm happy this week to be joined by Katarina Minwagen, a vegan nutritionist, a life coach, showrunner, and production assistant. Together with her partner, Johan Matten, she is a part of Changing Film, a green, sustainable, and environmental production service working in Sweden, Berlin, and New York. Together, they are producing a new sustainable series called Plant Kitchen. The series highlights incredible plant-based chefs and kitchens around the globe. Katarina has lived many lives, but the same core values bring her to this creative space and climate activism. In this episode, we talk about her steps through the modeling world, becoming an advocate for mental health and wellness, to her transition in working as a producer with a focus in sustainability and planetary health. She runs through onset changes that can be made, difficulties that she still runs into, and she talks about the importance of plant-based catering and that subsequent impact. In the last 15 minutes, at the end of the episode, we are joined by her life and business partner, Johan. Together, they talk about their new series, Plant Kitchen, and their goals with their production company, Changing Film. The kindness and the groundedness flows straight out of these people. I know you will feel it too. Here is Katarina Minwagen and later Johan Matten on In Her Lens. Katarina, welcome. Thank you for being here and being part of In Her Lens season 3. I'm really excited to be talking to you. I feel like you have a very unique perspective and a lot of different experiences that you bring to the work that you do today. I always start out every episode now this season with a 4 quick fire questions. They're based around the season. So I just thought about a season and a question that would maybe match that season. So are you down to answer them?
Yes, for sure.
So the spring question is, what is the first thing that you do when you wake up in the morning?
The first thing I do when I wake up in the morning is drinking a big glass of water.
I have one right next to me now.
Good. So important, because we're actually not aware of how much water we lose at night. So it's so important to really drink a lot of water.
We're starting off this episode with a good, healthy tip. The summer question is that if you could go to any concert of any artist, alive or past, tonight, who would you choose?
Oh, that's a tough one. Tonight, I always wanted to see Coldplay live. I actually missed 3 of their concerts. I had tickets twice, and once I had an opportunity to go with someone who has a press badge.
Oh wow. Yeah.
And I missed them all 3 times. So probably Coldplay.
Coldplay, that's a very good one. I mean, I've seen the videos. It looks like one of the most wholesome, beautiful shows that there is out there at the moment. The autumn question is, are you a coffee or tea person? I feel like maybe I know the answer to this from your Instagram. I feel like you're a matcha person, maybe.
I love matcha. So I stopped drinking real coffee about a year ago because it gives me a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I think actually most people would be much better off without caffeine in general. I mean, tea also has... it's not the same molecule, but it also gives us energy. I do drink both. I drink decaf, and I really love the taste of coffee. But I think if I would have to choose one of them, it would be tea. Yeah.
Yeah. And the last question, Winter, do you have an affirmation or a resounding word that you carry with you every day?
I do have a mantra that is actually meaningless because it's, so I'm doing TM meditation. So the mantra is supposed to not have a meaning, but an affirmation I have is I trust and surrender. It's three words, but I do have this deep trust in life that everything that happens, happens for a reason. And I think trust and surrender are both so, so powerful. So yeah, that's definitely my, I would say my favorite affirmation.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. So as I mentioned, you are really a hyphenated human being. You've worked as a model, as a health coach. You also had your own podcast. You still have it. You are now a showrunner and you're an activist, a vegan. I'm really excited to look at this industry through your eyes. But I do want to just start at the beginning. Where are you from? Where did you grow up? What was your family life like?
Yeah, so I'm born and raised in Cologne in Germany. And have a younger sister, had a pretty tough childhood, a pretty tough start in life. My dad was mentally ill. So from a very young age, I started to kind of figure out how to get in contact with myself and with everything that was going on inside of me, because I kind of had no one in my family who was taking care of me because they were all very occupied with their own stuff. And then diving into like my, so I grew up in Cologne, went to school there, kind of very early on felt the urge to go elsewhere. I don't know if that was partly because of my childhood. I really felt like I just wanted to leave. So when I was, I think like 13, 14, I started being approached on the street by model agents. And my mom was very much against it. She always told me I have to finish school first. And so that's what I did. But I started modeling while I was still going to school. And then at the age of 19, after I had finished school, it was the opportunity to just leave, right?
Yeah, right, yeah.
So, yeah, and that's how I started my modeling. I don't really want to call it a career because I always feel like of course I have to take care of my body and, you know, eat healthy and do all these kind of things to sustain the way I look like. But I don't really want to call it a career because I'm born the way I look like. I didn't do anything for it. So for me, it's a job and that's how I always saw it. So, yeah.
And where did modeling bring you the first, you got out of Cologne and where did you go? And what was that experience like? Of that independence, so, I guess. And it's also a young age to be, I mean, I know that I used to model, but I also have a couple of friends who were models and it is a very lonely experience as well. And then especially leaving your hometown.
Yeah, for sure. So I moved to Paris, which was very close to my hometown. It's about a 3-hour train ride. Didn't speak the language. So I would say those following 1.5 years were probably the most depressing years of my life. It was very tough. I would say it had a lot to do with my age and that I was just way too young. The business is very tough. You really need to have, well, I don't really know if you need to have elbows, but in Paris, it's just, you know, you go to all these castings, you have sometimes up to like 100 girls sitting there fighting for the same job. Mm-hmm. And then shy little me came into the room and I don't know. I was just too young. I was too young. I was too insecure. I didn't really know who I was back then. During that time, I met my first partner, which was, In the beginning, it was very stressful because he tried to be so supportive, but I was really in this deep depression. So it was kind of like, just let me be. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, it was obviously he was at some point really helping me to get out of this deep hole. And because modeling is such a great opportunity to travel, we actually decided to move to Cape Town. So that was the next, the next
stop,
the next location where I was. It was very, very beautiful. And I feel very, very privileged. We almost stayed there for a year with a few interruptions in between. And that was a very beautiful experience. It was very different from the experience that I had in Paris. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Cape Town. It's
Yeah, I was actually born in South Africa, so I've been quite a lot. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. It's so gorgeous. It's really, really gorgeous. And I love to live there. You know, it was a very privileged life. And still, I really do feel that the fashion industry is very, very slowly changing. But it is so interesting. So after all of these experiences and feeling like I was very lost, I wasn't very supported by my agency, I really felt like maybe there is an opportunity to help young models and to create. So I actually started creating a workshop concept for, which was called Conscious Models. And I started reaching out to some agencies because I really felt like, hey, if you girls are having the self-confidence and if they treat their bodies nicely and if they are healthy, they also gonna book more jobs. And it was so interesting because there was almost zero, I almost got zero feedback.
Like, wow.
They didn't even get back to me. And I really felt like this is really showing how much value a girl has, because it's so easy to, so if there's one girl who gets sick because of all of this depression, eating disorders, no matter what, and it's severe problems most of these girls are facing, they're worth nothing, because if one is telling an agent I can't work anymore, there's just another one that will replace that girl, right, that woman. And I do feel like it's slowly changing. There is some sort of awareness, but it's still not enough.
Yeah, it's like the awareness is there, or there's conversation about it in our communities. But when it's like any big issue, there is such a system in place that upholds it.
For sure.
I think it's really interesting that this is your background, because it makes you a very independent person, but also very self-aware, I think, in many ways. What do you think were the first building blocks that you got out of that for now your career that is more based in show running and leadership roles and changing? Always, I hear a theme of wanting to change something that's broken.
Yeah, for sure. So I do still model, but I actually shifted to only do that for vegan and sustainable brands, which is super cool. So I'm not making a lot of money anymore, because these brands usually don't have the budget, but it's a lot of fun. And I really feel like when I'm on set, I am treated like a human being. It's usually a great atmosphere. It's a lot of passion there, because these people are, it's all cause driven, right? It's such a big difference. It's not fast fashion. It's really like we're willing to change. We're willing to put a lot of effort and passion into change. But yeah, how did I get into filmmaking? So the answer is quite simple. My partner is a filmmaker. So I really felt like when he asked me, that was about two and... Are you still there?
We've moved over to a new recording program. So you were now talking about your first steps into film with your partner, Johan. So how did you two meet, and how did that conversation get started between the two of you?
Yeah. How did we meet? That's a long story. We actually kind of met on Tinder, but we actually started chatting on Instagram. We never matched on Tinder, but I had my Instagram account linked with my Tinder account. So he started following me a year later. He actually reached out on Instagram. We started chatting and I flew to Sweden.
Oh, wow.
We met and fell in love. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm currently sitting also, in the little cottage where we met.
Oh, that's so nice.
And so Johan, he studied acting. So he was an actor and kind of dove into that producing world because he's also writing screenplays. Mm-hmm. So he wrote a screenplay so he would be able to act, because we all know that it's pretty tough.
It's pretty tough.
The acting world. So he wrote this beautiful screenplay and acted in his movie, but he also produced it. And because he was very, very well produced, people started hiring him as a producer. So that's how he kind of started his producing career. And yeah, then during COVID, he started working a lot in Sweden, which he hasn't done before, and booked a commercial and just asked me if I would want to come with him to see the north of Sweden. And I'm always, I can't really, I'm one of these, I'm so hands-on. So I told him that I would just feel way too guilty to just chill at the hotel the whole day.
Right.
And I told him, if you want me to help, I'm happy to do that. And I did. And apparently I did quite an okay job because from then on, I got hired as a coordinator by this production company. And we started working together, and we really realized that we're quite a good team, and that because I know how he works as a human being, I really know what I have to do to take stress off his shoulders. And then in 2021, we still during COVID, Johan has a green card, so he was able to go travel to the US. I wasn't, so he got this big job producing a documentary feature about plastic in the ocean. And I was like, that sounds really interesting. Can we find a way so I can come? So we actually flew to Mexico for 2 weeks, I was able to get into the country from there. And that was kind of the first time that I realized that there's such a huge opportunity to make sets more sustainable and more green, because that's what it was all about, right? It was all about how can we avoid plastic?
Yeah,
that's what the documentary was about. And after really doing a lot of research and really starting to understand that obviously it's not just plastic, it's so much more than that. So much more that we can do to make a set more green. And yeah, it was a really beautiful experience. And then we obviously afterwards started reflecting about, okay, we're doing a lot of commercial work, and those sets they have never been green, even our own sets. I mean, we always had vegan sets because Johan and I were both vegan. So sets were always vegan, but they weren't green. We had plastic bottles left and right, buying a lot of, you know, new props instead of buying secondhand props. And so we actually started reflecting and thinking about, I mean, the production company is called Changing Film, and it had has always been called like that, but we were like, this is perfect. This is the perfect name to showcase that we want to change something in the film industry, because the film industry is very harmful for the environment. And that's kind of how it all started.
Yeah. And changing film, what are some of the core values? Like, how now, obviously it shifted a little bit as you both have grown in that. So today, what are three things that you really are striving for?
So I would say, I'm not even sure which is the number one. So I think a really, really important core value that we have is we want more equality in the film industry, because it's still a lot of men. It's usually a lot of ego on set. And so first thing, we always try to have minimum of 50% women on set. It makes the whole atmosphere so different. I really feel like it's so much calmer. It's calmer. It's more gentle. It's women are really good at what they're doing. And I really think that women are very oftentimes not given the opportunity to prove themselves. So we're really trying to have 50% women on set minimum. The next thing is we're a please and thank you set. We really feel like kindness is one of the most important things, especially when there's a lot of stress, right? I think it's so easy to lose patience with others, especially in a situation when there's a lot of stress. And by always reminding each other, and of course, Johan and I, we're the ones who are in charge. So we're really the ones who have to live it fully at all times. And I think it's really appreciated. I really feel like we so often get incredible feedback about how, there's a lot of kindness and a lot of compassion on our sets. And then the third really important thing is being as green as possible. And it's not always easy, especially during COVID. It was at times very, very challenging, very complicated. But being green, being as sustainable as possible is definitely the third top value, I would say.
Yeah. And so you've worked on set as kind of like the green officer, coordinator, advocating and tracking all choices on the set and actively pursuing to make them greener. I kind of want to just walk through, let's say you get, a short film on your desk. How do you start preparation, and what are some elements that that you start thinking about in order to make a set greener?
Yeah. So I would say the first thing is always crew. Can we be, first of all, as small as possible? And can we be as local as possible? Because booking flights, booking cars, it all really doesn't make any sense. And I really feel like, especially, of course, if we're in a very secluded area somewhere in Sweden, we might have to bring people from Stockholm or from other big cities. But we always try to hire locally. And then, of course, secondly, is if we can't hire locally, how do people get there?
Right.
A lot of people, especially here in Sweden nowadays, have electrical cars. Can we make sure that people are driving to set together so that there's not just a single person in a car? These are really, that's where it all starts, because crewing up is usually the first step.
And before we move on, what are... Let's say I'm a young producer. What would you recommend in trying to find local crew? What are there certain, the websites or resources or networking? What to you has been an important element in gathering those kind of connections?
Yeah. So there's definitely, Google is, I usually just Google. I usually just try to find, usually I actually try to find a local, sorry, I'm blanking the word. I'm trying to find a local production manager. I try to find someone who knows the area very well, to find a local location manager, because the location manager knows the area very well. Mm-hmm. He can show me around. He knows what's there, what we can use. And what he usually knows, or she usually knows as well, is a lot of people.
Right.
Because, so I would say the smartest is see if you can find a local location manager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's usually how I start, because that person will be connected, especially if it's someone who's working locally a lot. I would definitely say location manager is what I would go for.
Yeah. Great. Perfect. Okay, cool. Crewing up. And then what are other things with making it greener?
Yeah. So there's this rule of the three R's, mm-hmm. Meaning reuse, recycle, and reduce.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you always, whatever you do, if you really keep those three R's in mind, it's already has a huge impact on how to make a set more green and more sustainable. What I usually try to do, you try to talk with the heads of every department. So you kind of brainstorm with every head of every department and talk about what can we do in order to reduce, to reuse, or to recycle. For example, props. We've been talking a little bit about it earlier. How often have I been on sets and it's a bunch of new clothes, it's a bunch of, you know, like unopened makeup. It's all has to always be brand new. First step would be, can we get some secondhand stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Can we maybe even ask the cast? Usually, in my opinion and in my experience, if you ask the cast to bring their own stuff, they know what they look good in. Mm-hmm. Their stuff fits very well. You don't have to be afraid that it's the wrong size for the shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about being smart. Makeup is such, it's so bad for the environment. It's really, really bad. Try to stick to, you know, things that are maybe organic and don't have any plastic particles. And that's one of the steps. Then, of course, a set consumes a ton of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Try to look at how can you use, for example, LEDs instead of regular lights. That's already making a huge, huge impact. Try to not use generators. With green energy, it's a little tricky because you never really know, even if you are in a studio, for example, that says we're using green energy. In the end, you don't really know what you're actually using,
mm-hmm.
because of how the system works. It's still something that you can obviously like talk about if mm-hmm. you're shooting inside. Try to avoid batteries that, like singular use batteries.
Right.
Try to, in the summer, not blast the AC. In the winter, do we really need to have the room heated up to 25 degrees?
Mm-hmm.
Is it maybe okay if we all put on another jacket and have the room heated up to 18 or 19 instead?
Mm-hmm.
So these are a lot of things already again, I would really say traveling to said here again, try to share cars, try to be smart about things. Also, when you buy the props, when you buy all you need for a set, try to be smart about it. Try to plan it. Try to not go Monday here, Tuesday there, Wednesday there. Try to do it maybe all in one day. Help each other out. Really communicate. Really make a plan about things. And then what we also already talked about a little bit is veganism. It's still making, so you can, the CO2 footprint of a regular catering can be reduced to almost 50% if you go vegan. That's nuts, right? It's insane.
It's insane statistics. I mean, in general, I have some statistics that you sent my way as well, and I just want to say it. In 2018, the Oxford University study found that the single biggest way to reduce all of our environmental impact is to avoid animal products. Now, 80% of farmland land in the world is dedicated to livestock animals for dairy and meat. However, that product only accounts for about 18% of our calorie intake and about 37% of our protein consumption. But it is responsible, animal agriculture, for 18% of all greenhouse gas emissions, which is way more than all even transport emissions combined. I think there are a lot of people that are having conversations around veganism, especially after a couple of these really great documentaries that have been coming out. So like Cowspiracy, I remember that for me was a really big one. However, I do think it also still, there is, as with many things in the world, stigmas built around it and assumptions built around it. Like, oh, vegan is this and vegan is not wearing leather and not eating honey and it's this and it's that. But as you just said, if you just cater on a film set, just the catering, reducing that by 50%, every little bit counts. The three R's that you were just talking about, all these little things from a single use battery to one that you can charge again, the impact of that is phenomenal. It's really important to talk about these scary statistics. And it's also really fascinating because we are shaping culture by telling stories and sharing images and crafting ideas into the world. That's, I think, what's such a cool thing about art making is, and you're creating a product that still has an impact. But while you're making the product, you are also having an impact. How do you find veganism and filmmaking? You shared a little bit about, food on set, but in general, it is a big part of your identity. And I do think it's important to that we talk about that intersection for you.
Yeah. I really think in the end, it all comes down to communicating it right. As you said, I think people really have such pre-assumptions and really, I think a lot of, especially men, think that if there's vegan catering on set, they're just not going to be full. Because, of course, a lot of people on set are, the work on set can be very physical, can be very, very hard and physical. And I understand that people need to fill up. And so I think it all comes down to really making sure that if you choose to have vegan catering on set, to really, really make sure it's good catering, because there's definitely a difference in quality. Really make sure that it's maybe easy vegan food, meaning that people wouldn't necessarily think about it's even vegan in the first place. There's great meat alternatives nowadays. There's great substitutes for almost everything. And I really feel like a lot of people the vegan catering that we have on sets, people wouldn't even notice it's vegan if you wouldn't tell them before. But again, I would say it all comes down to communicating, talking to people, educating them. Hey, this is the difference we can make. Mm-hmm. We're cutting down 50% of our CO2 footprint. And are you willing to commit to this? So that's what we usually do. We're currently working on a sustainable series, Johan and I. And that's the first thing we tell everyone. If you want to work on this, it's an amazing project. Are you willing to commit to be vegan when you are on set? Mm-hmm. And usually the feedback is incredible. Mm-hmm. I so far never had complaints. And it's really about educating and talking to people so they don't feel like it's forced upon them.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a really interesting thing in general when it comes to switching things around that are set in stone is just the why.
Yeah.
It's crazy how a little understanding of why we are doing what we're doing and comes with anything in life, it puts it into clarity, and then you can also stand behind it. So I guess one of the biggest things that how we communicate what we do is probably more important than the doing.
Yeah, and I really feel like that goes for everything in terms of making a set more green. So what I also always love to tell other people who are filmmakers, I always tell them, make your own choices. Even if you are working on a set that is not green, make your green choices, because you can inspire others. You can make a difference. If everyone sees that you are bringing your metal water bottle, you know, your reusable water bottle,
yeah,
other people might get inspired and do the same. If you bring your own bamboo cutlery, people might even be an opener for a great conversation. You know, why are you not using the plastic cutlery? Because this is more sustainable and I can clean it and I can reuse it.
Yeah.
And really thinking about what can I do, and really making, when there's a green production, really making everyone be passionate about it. Like, we're doing something for the right reason. Make them passionate about it. Make them feel like they're a part of something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I do want to talk about things like that the individual can do on set, but I also want to talk about some of the things that are still problematic when you are making a set green. Like, what are some issues that you've encountered on set that that have been tougher areas to work through? And then we can talk a little bit about what the individual can do, maybe.
Yeah. So as I just said, I think it's still sometimes very problematic, especially when you are not filming in cities, when you are filming in more secluded areas. I still think it's very problematic to find gear that's energy friendly, not finding places where you don't necessarily need a generator. Mm-hmm. You know, generators are consuming a lot of diesel. Usually it's really, really bad. During COVID, it was very, very difficult to not use single-use plastic.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when you were talking about makeup as well, because of course there are also hygiene rules. Exactly. And I'm sure COVID is, or I know that COVID was a time where that was like, okay, one mask in every room, let's say, and gloves and hand sanitizer in plastic compartments. If I just think about the extra waste that was generated in that time, and still in some places, it's very scary. But also, yeah, health is, of course, what is also very important. So that is such a delicate balance and a difficult one if you're working in the green sector.
Yeah, totally. No, COVID was definitely made it very, very, very difficult to make our sets green or keep them green. It wasn't really possible to use, you know, to go to a coffee place with your tumbler and they would be like, no, we're not allowed to touch it. But in general, yeah, I would say that the biggest, I think it's very easy to hire a local crew. It's very easy, usually not always, to tell crew, hey, please share a car, please come by train. You will still always have someone who's like, nah, but I want to fly because I don't want to sit on a train for 7 hours. But, you know, these are the things that are very, very easy. When it comes to using green energy and using maybe less energy, I would say it's much easier to do so when you are shooting in a bigger city. Mm-hmm. What I really can't deal with anymore is this, like, let's order a bunch of stuff and then just send it back.
Right.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
Yeah.
So yeah, the biggest thing is definitely how can we make sure that we're using as little energy as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. For you and the work that you do on sets and working with people, what is some advice that you have about working with people and sharing this information, and how have you existed on sets and what has that experience been like for you?
Yeah, again, I would say it's all about trying to be gentle. I really feel like when we educate people and when we want to show them something new, usually the natural reaction is a pullback, right? Like, so be gentle, make them curious. Don't get too emotionally involved when people when they don't want to do the work with you. But again, I think the most important really is create an environment where people can be passionate.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting concept that I've been reading a lot about and hearing a lot about. It's like, you know, it's inviting people in and calling people in rather than calling people out. Instead of being like, this is wrong, it's like, this is a new way to try and do you want to join. And I think that that is crucial in everything that I hear you say, and the value of please and thank you. Yeah,
totally.
Thank you so much. So we are going to ask Johan to come join us because I want to talk about Plant Kitchen, and obviously he's involved and you guys work together. And I think it's important that I see both of you. What I would like to do is I am going to send you another link.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Hello. Hi. Hey. So nice to see you.
Yeah, same.
Thank you so much for being here. Yeah, of course. So Jan is here. We've obviously heard a lot about you now. But if you could introduce yourself to us and tell us a bit about Changing Film and why you started it.
Yeah, my name is Johan Matten. I'm a film producer, and I started Changing Film Productions in New York about 12, 13 years ago. I was doing a feature film, and the production company became a big part of what I was meant to do. And I realized there was an opportunity to create content, and I was fortunate enough to be able to keep creating art and film in a new way.
Yeah, which is great. And I think, you know, Katrina shared a little bit about, you know, creating your own opportunity, which I also very much relate to as an actor, like how to navigate that industry. How do your roles differ right now in Changing Film? Like what does Johan do? What does Katarina do? And how does that complement each other? And how do you build a company together like this with these new goals in mind with sustainability?
Yeah, I think you said it so nicely. Like we do complement each other in a way, like we cover for each other. We keep giving each other feedback throughout the process of creating project and films. I think that Katarina is very detailed oriented, and she really like digs deep into like the nitty gritty work of like in this instance where with our sustainable show, she's doing a lot of incredible research, being out there and finding ways for us to gather information and to collect the script, basically, because it's a documentary, so it's being built as it goes. Mm-hmm. While I'm more have maybe the experience of overseeing the steps of production. Mm-hmm. But once we're in this specific project, our sustainable series called Plant Kitchen, we definitely share both the burden and the good of it. And I would say we more or less co-direct and co-write and co-produce this project. And it lands kind of naturally, the tasks we take on.
Yeah, and I think it's also really beautiful, actually, that we both don't have an ego in it. Mm. We really both do whatever needs to be done, and we wouldn't fight about things. It would just be like, yeah, if I have to get up at 3 and make some sandwiches for the crew, I'll do it, you know, because it has to be done. And the same when it comes to you directing. If I have a good idea and am suggesting maybe a different angle, he wouldn't be like, yeah, but you're not directing this. He would just try it, and if it works, it works. It's all for the project.
Definitely no hierarchy there.
You know, I really come from a theater background, but what I find is like the work that is made collaboratively, it's fun to make, which is, you know, the majority of your life is then spent in the making process, because that's the thing about creating a product. Once it's finished, it's out there. But in the hierarchy through the power struggles that exist within this industry and throughout the systems that uphold it, unfortunately, it is not the norm. But you would hope that, you know, we're all creating something together. Let's equally respect each other. But it is actually a pioneering move to really uphold those values when you're actually working on a project. I would love to hear about Plant Kitchen. It looks beautiful. I've seen the beautiful teaser. Tell us a bit about where the idea came from and where you're at now with the project.
Yeah, sure. It actually pivoted into becoming what it is today. Initially, I wanted to support Katharina with, she was running a really well done podcast for a year, when I thought with the combination of her knowledge for nutrition and coaching and her ability to speak so openly to people and have the access, the ability to make people open up to her, I thought, why don't me as a filmmaker come on board and film this, and we go with you around the world, because there's some hidden topics and blind spots in terms of plant-based food and resources for sustainable farming food out there that we haven't really spoken about enough. And I was meant to come with her to film and her talking to sustainable chefs and vegan chefs around the world, and her being a nutritionist, talk to people around the world and knew about certain aspects of nutrition and value in food that we maybe hadn't heard of before. And then we started to look at the content that was out there that was appreciated by people, such as Netflix Chef's Table, and when we really find these biopics of incredible interesting people around the world. And we thought, why don't we do something like this with a twist where we haven't seen this before, like plant-based chefs around the world who are in their way, in their capacity, inspiring the world. And that's how the project came to life. And then it grew from there because of people we attached to the project. I must say Katharina was really smart in like who we were to approach and who to attach to the project, and some key players in the industry that have done this before, and even to the extent of like Academy Award winning directors that came on board. And all of a sudden, with those names, the projects expanded and investors came our way, and it became much more serious and a much more larger project, I would rather say.
Yeah, sometimes it just snowballs out of control, and you're like, wow, okay. That's really cool. And I think it's interesting that you, obviously, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but with your background in podcasting and also in health coaching, that, and now with changing film, that it is an element that hits so many parts of who you are as a person. When you are creating a project like that, I have the same when I'm creating this podcast, that for me, it's really like gut instinct on who I would like to talk to. How did you guys find the people, the chefs that are in this series? And is it also who do I connect to? Or are you thinking about different elements in constructing story? How did you find the people that are involved in Plant Kitchen?
Yeah, so the research that I did, we had kind of like a main topic for season one, which was fine dining, because we really wanted to show the world that vegan food is much more than just having some lettuce and, you know,
and chickpeas.
Really, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Really, really showing people that there's a whole different world out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously we started looking more into Michelin star restaurants and fine dining. And there's quite a lot out there, especially here in Europe. We were pretty amazed to see that there's really a lot of vegan chefs in the world. And yeah, of course. I mean, the stories are a very important part because that's what we're doing. We're telling stories, right? So stories, but also, of course, how we connect with these people. A lot of these people we already met in person. And I can just say we met so many incredible souls out there, and they're really all in it for the cause as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so, so amazing to connect with these people and to really see their passion and to also give them a voice in a way, because of course some of them might already be very established chefs and are very well known, but then there's others who are maybe not that well known yet. And I think it's a really beautiful opportunity for us to give those people a voice and really show the world what's out there.
Yeah, it was a lot of pre-interviewing to find these stories, to see which restaurants and chefs are interesting. What story do they have? What obstacles did they have? What did they have to overcome to become a Michelin star vegan restaurant in this modern day in society? But I also think we, in terms of finding our co-producers, like Kip Anderson and Keegan Coon, and Cowspiracy and Seaspiracy, these were movies that had inspired us. And we looked at these Netflix movies and the other movies they have done in the past and just contacted people through their usually when contacting people, you contact them through their publicist, not through their manager, because their managers and agents are looking for money and their publicists are looking for opportunities for them to shine. So that's usually the
route. That's a good tidbit to remember.
Yeah, always contact the publicist, not the agents. The first time it just felt surreal to talk to all these incredible environmental and animal activists around the world. Has done such an incredible job out there to inspire people in different ways and capacity. And they leaned on to us because our project was so different in terms of not being political.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst a lot of documentaries out there are talking about the negative effects of climate change and animals and the landmass use, plastic, water. And we didn't want to talk about any of that. We just wanted to show incredible plant-based food around the world. So it was a new angle to attack the system a little bit to inspire people rather than educate people.
A beautiful angle that you chose, because it is exactly that. I feel like when I talk to people, it's the same with like any big issue. If I also talk with people about gender representation in film and TV, if it becomes like about numbers, people feel very called out. And we were just talking about calling people in versus calling people out and inviting people into a space. And I think that this is a really beautiful way of doing that. What are your goals with Changing Film? Where are you at right now with Plant Kitchen? Are you in production or post? And where do you see this growing? More seasons? Do you have other projects that you want to delve into as well?
Yeah, good question. We are at a place now when we have started the film episode 2 of Plant Kitchen, while we simultaneously are navigating the landscape of politics in terms of distribution and sales. We can't talk too much about in depth about it because we're in between certain negotiations with some of the major platforms and such. So we're not saying we're like halting production right now, but we're at a stage where it's going to become significantly important to know what the platform's angle will be upon this and how much we have to adapt without wasting people's time and money and energy. So we have started the film episode 2, but we have paused a little bit. And the way we want to go with Changing Film is to solely focus on sustainable series and films and plant-based products as well. So the dream would be to be greenlit for this fall season. Right now we're filming independently with investors' money, but ultimately we want this to be seen. So the dream is to be greenlit by these major platforms and be able to do this for a foreseeable future, maybe season 2, 3, and 4, because we have lined up for research for restaurants that these stories just have to be told. So
yeah.
And on the side of that, of course, we have some ideas in terms of other sustainable documentaries that we want to try to accomplish these next year.
Really exciting things. Thank you so much for sharing. Is there anything that you want to still say and talk about? And we've spoken about veganism. We've spoken about, you know, what Changing Film is doing on set. Is there any like message that you want people to hear still?
No, I really feel like I said everything. I think it's really important that everyone who is already on that mission, as I said, take the opportunity to do whatever you can do as a single person, and don't feel like as an individual you can't change the world. I really believe you can. Mm-hmm. I think you, whatever you do, you always inspire others. So really take that opportunity to show others the way and inspire.
Yeah, I agree. And then like, don't give up because of imperfectionism. Like, you can't be perfect in this area. And some people feel like if I can't be, then it's all or nothing. And I really believe that there's a gray zone there. We're not perfect either. We have to fly to destinations at times and no one can do everything. So don't let that hold you back.
Thank you both so much for taking the time. It was very, very nice to meet you. And I'm really thrilled to have gotten to know you and to see where all of this is going to go. And I know that I already feel, you know, inspiration to pick up certain things and adjust the way that I as an individual can live. And I'm really excited about the message that you're bringing. So thank you.
Thanks for this opportunity.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Katarina and Johan, for taking the time to talk to me and talk to us about the work that you were doing. All the previous works and links to Changing Film are in the episode notes, plus some further resources on some facts and figures that Katarina and I spoke about. As I mentioned to Katarina, it is really easy to see the golden thread throughout her career. And I think, I just want to say that her story is proof of a dynamic and exciting space that exists currently in sustainable filmmaking. All are welcome, and the more perspectives we have, the more lessons, the more solutions, and new ways of being. Staying kind to one another while we reroute the wires that are so deeply ingrained. I'll be back next week with a brand new guest and episode. I hope that you've been enjoying the season, and you can join us on Instagram if you have anything to discuss at In Her Lens Podcast, or if you have any recommendations for who I should talk to or what I should talk about. You can send me a message inherlenspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for being here, and I'll see you very soon. Bye.